Good morning. Today is Friday, October the 6th. Joining us this morning is Eureka City Manager Greg Sparks. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Brian.
Let's see if we can find a quote. Here we go. From Henry Miller. There are no perfect beings. There never will be. Boy, doesn't that wrap up the political season as we're getting close to the onset of that, huh?
I don't know. We've wrapped up a political season? It's a constant political season.
Yeah, no kidding. That's got to get a little tiring for you and staff. Yeah, because it seems like it's an ongoing thing all the time. And I don't know if it's the accountability of it that is the benefit of the game, so to speak. I know you guys had the situation with the courtyard.
Yes.
Okay. And I imagine we're going to hear about that sometime next spring, about how things go and how things process. What were the lessons that the city learned about this whole situation and either how it was done or how it should have been done?
Boy, now it's interesting you'd bring that up, only because I wrote a column in the City e-newsletter for October on public process, and I gave three examples, and I led off with what I considered that was really some bad public process, and that was the courtyard. And
it's right up there, I think, with the bear. Over the
last
40
I'm glad
years.
I wasn't here.
It's kind of
bear,
glad
right?
now that, but you know what happened to those guys.
And you know, there's always lessons to be learned from when you go through a public process of what worked well, what didn't work well. And the fact matters, we're still in a public, or we're trying to get to a public process on the courtyard. You know, quite frankly, we're still in negotiations with Costco. That hasn't, you know, about for purchasing the city's courtyard. So
that's not a bad thing, is it?
No, that's not a bad thing. The good thing about that is, obviously, they want to expand, and they need additional parking in order to make their store expansion.
Well, and the ugliest place down there, other than the substation, is you guys.
That would be,
okay,
would be
so
right.
Could kind of clean things up a little bit. Unfortunately, it's in a part of town that doesn't have the feeling like it's going to get pretty for a long time, as long as there's still the foot traffic in the neighborhood. But
yeah, and it's industrial area as well as, you know, is the retail with Costco.
Well, some of us think the mill looks pretty darn pretty.
You know, I've got to admit, I like it. I don't have any issue with that. And from a public process standpoint on the courtyard was just that as we were trying to analyze that location across from the zoo, Kennedy Field, it just became, in a sense, kind of too public that we're even looking at it before we could even, you know, put as to what this could look like, what the traffic issues would be and all that. And it certainly generated, you know, the neighborhood come to council meetings before it was ever on a city council meeting. And we were never able to effectively get out in front and tell a story. It was always, we were on the defensive on that.
I would suspect, Greg, that if it was 6 months ago and you identified two or three locations, potential, mm-hmm. okay, now you're getting feedback. You're not taking arrows.
Yeah.
It was like it was a single-track mindedness and that the city was going to force. And I think, I think that was what the perception was.
No, that absolutely what the perception was that, the city had already decided this was going to happen. Why weren't we told about it or discussed with? And, that wasn't the case. Council hadn't made a decision. We hadn't made a recommendation. But, again, the perception was, if Costco wants the courtyard and the city has to move the courtyard, this must be a done deal. That's trying to make sure you don't have those come up as we look at future alternatives is going to be pretty important.
And there are other options.
There are.
To move it.
There are other options, and we're continuing to look at those and understand the cost implications because it's, you get so much money for selling the courtyard, but it doesn't pay for the full cost of creating a new courtyard. So we really have to
understand that. Considering that, is it, 1940s?
I'm sure,
or
at
50s.
Least that, yeah.
I mean, how about ADA toilets? Okay. I bet there are not a whole lot of them down there. You know, I mean, just some real basic things that weren't in play before that are now. I don't think you would anticipate that just selling the property is going to get you the Taj Mahal for buses or for, you know, public works cars. I mean, there's going to have to be some buy-up because your facility is going to be better.
Right. Yeah, you're getting rid of an old facility and creating one then that will last you into the next, you know, 50, 75 years type thing.
Are there a lot of, not that you want to share it, are there a lot of other options?
There are not a lot of other options. And one of the things that's important from an option standpoint is, you know, we have enough cost with building the facilities and all that we really need to have land that's, if it's not already city owned, that it is at least is not very expensive land. So when, you know, at different times, people will throw out an option like Kmart property. Well, we did happen to talk with the owner of Kmart just last Friday, and their preference is to lease that to, another retail. That's not going to be an inexpensive piece of land to purchase. So, and it had other issues, but certainly we'll provide counsel, though, with alternatives like that.
Well, you probably don't want to have that as your gateway impression coming in. Yeah, I mean, you could tuck it back, perhaps,
yes.
And then by the front or you know, kind of do a flip-flop on that so you guys were behind. So it'd be more like a Hensel's where, you know, a driveway in and then you got the rough stuff there.
Right.
Thanks. It's 8:19.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika, Thunder Country, 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action, all season long. Brought to you on KINS, in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Sparks. Greg, some of the different challenges I know that are out there, you've got structural changes. You've got cultural changes. I'm not dancing around it. I just try and broad brush here for a second. Mm-hmm. With these various buildings that are condemnable, that are being knocked down, that should be knocked down, they're not flop houses, but most of us would consider them along that line. Without stepping over the line of big government, how far can the city or the county or the state go to get some of these places that are places that the landlord would never spend a night in themselves, either brought up to that point where they would, or knock them down or force a sale?
Yeah, it's a balancing act, certainly. You know, you have the state health and safety code, you have building code, and, you know, we've, you know, these are all a result of, you know, certainly going to court, saying, you know, that we've noted this many, say the budget, which is, you know, currently closed.
And not locally owned, so we're okay.
actually, the new owner is local.
But, oh, good.
But yeah, previous owner wasn't. And I believe we had 300 violations that were noted time when we went in there.
How does it get to that point? Or is it one time going through and you see 300 infractions? Okay, that's understandable.
Basically, we had to get a court order to be able to go in and do that type of level of inspection we did.
So does that represent four or five visits and
no,
75
was,
each
we,
time?
We went in kind of en masse, code enforcement, build inspection, police department, and because you know when you're going into a place like this that you're going to run into some hostile people.
A little resistance? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And, you know, the violations, I mean, they could be everything from, you know, extensive mold, bed bugs, cockroaches, to, you know, improper wiring, you know, things hanging off of, you know, lighting fixtures.
So real safety
health issues, okay. Missing toilet fixtures. I mean, things that are really pretty outrageous. And, you know, right, we don't shut a place down because, you know, it's something that you could, you know, wipe some mold off of. Or.
So the city was unaware that it had gotten to this point?
You know, we aren't.
Or county in this situation.
Well, no, it's particularly a city issue unless someone's filing a complaint, say, with county health department.
Well, I'm thinking DHHS, I know a number of the folks were receiving some form of assistance. Don't they follow that up and make sure that, you know, the living standards are adequate if they're automatically paying? Because I know that's part of the game, the automatic paying for lodging?
And I don't know enough about their process as to, you know, what they're allowed to put people into and not.
Right, certainly, you work together.
But certainly there's a shortage of available locations. And we worked with DHHS both when the Blue Heron was shut down. And right, that wasn't that many units. You had more at the budget that were shut down. And some of those units, I think, had even already been closed off. But right, they just keep getting worse and worse. And it really kind of points out the need for having regular inspections on some of these properties.
So is that the city's responsibility or the local jurisdiction, or is that the county as the funding entity or representative of the state?
It's probably just where we can both be working together on things like that. Because you really don't want to put people into unsafe living conditions. And what we saw from the budget, when we shut down the budget, those people just didn't then, you know, start living in the green belts and in the marsh. In many cases, there was a pretty strong criminal element in there that had other options on where to live. And DHHS was able to get other people placed. And, you know, we provided some of that initial dollars also to help get people relocate, with the idea then that we went after the owner, and we end up with a pretty good settlement on from city fines on the budget. So that's one of the few that we, you know, came out pretty well on.
Now, they're pretty well as being the situation being addressed.
Financially whole and situation addressed. And now, since it's been sold, right, I think from public, you drive by, you don't see anything going on there. They are working with local contractor in terms of trying to come up with a plan on how that building is going to be renovated.
So there is some behind-the-scenes activity going on. It's not being ignored.
Right.
Now, there is a structure that got knocked down in Eureka. Sorry, folks. But he is the Eureka city manager.
Yeah.
On H.
Yes.
It just kind of laid there, all the remnants laid there for a while. Now it's kind of starting sort of to be cleaned up a little bit.
Right. The contractor got pulled off on another job. They kind of got in on emergency basis to get that knocked down for us, but then had to since kind of pull off and then came back on. And I think it's should be mostly removed by now. I haven't gone by there in the last week, but.
Yeah, take a new way home. Is there protocol for the community in this kind of stuff? If they see something or they anticipate that there's something akin to this, I'm sure it's no surprise to you guys, but how long does it take to get remediation?
You know, we really try to work and work and work with property owners to deal with the remediation issues because if we have to knock it down, since we're doing it on our dime until we can put a lien on it and go through a foreclosure process. So the more we can get people to work with us, the better.
It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Sparks, Eureka City Manager. Talk Shop presented by Redec and by CDH Painting. Obviously, one of the big elephant right now, Greg, is the marijuana stuff.
Right.
We're inside of 3 months now. I've certainly been pretty clear in my perspective about this over the months and years. At this point, what is the tact that the city's going to do as far as retail? Now, we don't have a bar zone,
mm-hmm.
but there certainly are limitations on the number of bars. Okay, we don't have a liquor license. I mean, that's a state thing. But there is a finite number of liquor licenses in the area. What are we looking at with marijuana sales? I've had intimations from the electeds at the city that, and I really take umbrage at this, the free market will determine how many retailers Eureka will have and where they will be. It's like, wait a minute, we got general plans for everything else. Why is this being treated as this special category other than PC? And if that's what it is, at least we're going to label it what it is and okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
So what should we, as people who live and work in Eureka, anticipate January 1st?
Well, here's what we've got going on so far. We currently have 41 applications in for different types of cannabis-related businesses. Six of those have been approved. There's going to be probably quite a bit more approved now in the next, particularly within the next 30 days as they kind of work their way through this process, because it's a much more elaborate process than you have on any other type of business.
The retail side or the manufacturing side?
This is 41. We only have one retail outlet that put in for a permit and is currently permitted. You know, it's down in Old Town. It's been there for a few weeks now. So one out of the 41 is a retail business. The others are anything from testing labs, the various types of manufacturing, transport companies, that type of thing. So,
is it special license for transportation?
There's these different categories that the state provides for, and transportation is one of the license types. So I think what we're going to see what council approved on first reading this week, and that'll still come up in on the 17th of October for the second reading. And how they're dealing with retail is they didn't set a limit on the number of retail establishments, but what it's going to be, though, is an RFP, RFQ type process where we'll take two permit applications every 6 months into the system. And what that will do, it'll council then and the community will be able to look, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years from now, is four the right amount? Is five, six of these, does that seem like the right amount in the community, or are we getting too, should we shut that down and not allow any additional retail establishments? So that's really been more the tack the city council has taken.
So how do you avoid either the appearance or the reality of government controlling retail, the formula restaurants in Arcata, right? Restraint of trade, mm-hmm. all of those arguments, here comes Sparks and Papstein, but we don't want them, or picking up, and now we shut it off, not because of capacity, but because of the individuals.
Mm-hmm. Right, you have to have very objective criteria that you're utilizing for for those types of businesses. And that, you know, that had been done back, gosh, when the city did the first medical cannabis ordinance, kind of long before I was here, and set up an RFQ process, and then they were never satisfied with the applicants that they came. Either they had, you know, no business plan, didn't have the financial ability to put it together, those types of things.
That's kind of the private sector stuff, not government sector.
But, you know, on cannabis, it's going to be highly regulated. And because, like you say, it's not like everything else. It is still, federal regulations on cannabis and how that's all going to match up in the next couple of years between the states and the feds.
Well, I figure there's a pretty good indication, because on the other side of the street, when you're in the county, there's a couple of them.
Yes. And I think that
says something. I don't know what it says.
And that was
but
one of the issues
something.
That came up at council meetings, that, gee, if we could be very restrictive on retail, but then if the city is ringed by them in Myrtletown, Cutton, then what did that accomplish?
At least it's not in the city.
Who is that?
KINS, News and Information Time is here.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. Back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Sparks. Greg, kind of rapid fire, because we're kind of up against the wall a little bit. The governor's signing of the sanctuary state stuff. Does that put California in the bullseye as far as the marijuana, DOJ, the Department of Drugs and Feeling Good
else.
And all that other? Are we now different-er?
I don't know the answer to that yet. It's, you know, certainly we heard, you know, Attorney General Sessions say a few months ago about sanctuary cities. And it depends, I think, on what other states do. But certainly at this point, I think California is probably the first one to, on a statewide level, to take that action. So
are you concerned or just mildly curious at this point?
I don't know if I'm concerned yet. I think probably mildly curious would be a good way to phrase it.
Dredging. And the small boat basin.
Yes.
Last month you were talking that there was going to be a little bit of carving out.
Right.
Is that on
that
schedule?
That is proceeding well. Mercer Fraser doing a great job out there. They initially were using more of a bucket. Now they're using more of a clamshell type operation of getting and then it's basically, it's loaded on a huge barge and taken about, I think it's 4 miles out to an area called the Hoods, the Humboldt Ocean, whatever.
It's where you can take it.
Disposal site.
Yes. Yeah.
And that work is going well.
I've always wondered if that would make sense for clean fill in some of the areas that need clean fill. Probably not, because it probably would, or it'd be way expensive.
Right. I think EPA made it real clear to us that they weren't going to approve any land disposal of it. So,
kind of squares that up. Status of Gunther Island and
yeah, really nothing new there since kind of with what been was reported earlier in the summer. What's required in order to move forward on any type of transfer is a CEQA document. So that's really in the kind of the WIOTs.
And the processes also. Yeah.
Yes.
So far, you've had a week for the quarter to end. TOT, retail sales tax, any of that kind of stuff, what are the preliminaries indicating?
Well, we're always a quarter behind in terms of when we meet with our consultant in terms of what's come in. So I couldn't tell you how the summer went yet, but generally speaking, we continue to see pretty good growth in TOT. And I think just in the last, 6-7 years, we've gone from about, 2 million to almost 3 million in terms of what's collected in TOT. Sales tax continues to, track okay.
Bumping along?
Bumping along. Okay. And we're going to be holding a work session with City Council for the next meeting, talking about pension rates and projections. So I think that'll be a good discussion.
Fixed cost.
Good discussion to have with City Council.
Yeah, I know what that means. I can read between that line.
Well, it means, you know, our five-year projections are pretty significant increases in unfunded liability, pension costs, and so it
where's
always,
that? Where's the hump on that?
You know, it's hard to add if there's exactly a hump. It seems like it's a fairly steady increase. That hump's going to come at some point, but certainly what we see over the next 5 years are just still steady, kind of some steady increases.
That's what I was saying. Probably going to be more than a decade out before it is leveled off and starts to decline.
And then there's things that keep impacting that. I mean, such as the CalPERS board changing their projected rate of return in the long term from 7.5 down to 7. Well, then that has to be made up. But 7.5 was unrealistic.
Well, they must not be looking at the stock exchange and the growth that's had, huh? Thanks for coming by, bud.
You bet.
See everybody on Monday.